Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. My name is Jamie and John is here with me. What's up?
Dude, how you doing, man?
Doing pretty good. Pretty good.
Awesome. Awesome. It's the weather is a roller coaster here in Kentucky. Earlier this week we had snow. I'm now sitting here in a guns out, sun's out shirt. You know, life couldn't be better.
Yeah. Completely agree. It's I like it. I like that things are getting colder because I don't know. I like the cold.
I'm going to mow my yard a couple more times, get up all the leaves. We're having a bonfire at my house this weekend. Man, things are great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll check in again next week, see if they're still great after you have a bonfire with a bunch of teenagers here. But yeah,
that's true.
I got a couple people I want to thank for some 5-star reviews over on Apple Podcasts. This comes from S.Nash13. It says, Harlan County Proud, one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. So, somebody from my home area, really appreciate you listening. This one comes from...
God, I'm so glad they finally got the internet over there. So, gosh,
I think
that's awesome.
They probably had to drive to Corbin to get a signal. This is from Sweet 62592, huge crime addict here, and I've listened to this, and it's one of the best podcasts I've listened to. Thank you for not only sharing amazing stories, but doing it tastefully. It's my favorite thing to listen to.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Guys, it's almost December 1st, which means there will be a brand new Patreon episode releasing on that day. If you haven't joined, Jamie and I started a Patreon account almost 8 years ago. We have never raised the price. I think the switch over to Apple at one point raised prices for people, but that was not us. So for really as little as a cup of coffee at your local Tim Hortons or Starbucks, you can get a bonus episode of True Crime Cast each and every month. And when we can, which is most of the time, we upload our episodes early and ad-free.
We always make them ad-free, but the early is relative. I would say 98% of the time.
Yeah, this past week's was a little late on Patreon, but it was still early, technically.
It's still ad-free.
Yes.
There we go. Awesome. Yeah, guys, we really appreciate you. And good Tim Hortons drop in there, John.
Did you like what I did there?
I did, as we're going to be going to Canada for today's case. So why don't you go ahead and get us rolling, eh?
Yeah, we are going to be talking about Michaela Bolly, who was born on July 2nd, 1999. She was born with the name Michaela Margaret Kim Niebergall in Saskatchewan, Canada. Just a few months before she disappeared, which was in 2015, her name was changed to Michaela Bolly. Michaela's mother, Paula, was a consultant for the Ministry of Social Services for the government of Saskatchewan. Her father is not officially known. We'll get back to that in just a little bit. But they ended up living with Michaela's aunt and grandmother and two younger siblings in Yorktown, Saskatchewan. Paula described her daughter as shy and quiet, with a love of playing the violin and being in the drama club at her local high school.
Things are going to get bad here pretty quickly. So I just need to ask you, while things can still be light, she worked for the Ministry of Social Services. You are a social worker. Would you like to?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I want to wear something similar to what a Catholic priest would wear to work.
You were going to dress like a Mountie.
No. Well, gosh. Okay. That would be cool too. But, just the robe would be awesome.
Okay. Just wanted to do that before things get too dark. But here we go. Michaela was a junior at Sacred Heart High School, and one of her best friends was Shelby Natick. Shelby met Michaela in the ninth grade, and she was immediately aware of how Michaela was super shy. Really hard to get to know her. She was not outgoing, but of course, like most introverts and other quiet people, once you get to know her, you love her, right? She said, Michaela came up to me, and she poked me on the shoulder and was like, hey, come sit with us. So we became like a big group, like 10 of us. By the 11th grade, that group had dwindled down a little, but Michaela and Shelby were still very close. They spent their lunch breaks at the smokers area at the school, even though Michaela didn't smoke. because it was the place to go and talk. They talked about music. They gossiped about people. It was the social gathering place. And again, this was not that long ago when she was in high school, about 10 years ago, and they still had a smoking area. I don't know that that's still a thing. My high school had one.
Really? Mine did not. And I grew up in Jellicoe, which is maybe the whole school was smoking.
I was going to say, you were probably allowed to smoke in class. Michaela talked about playing her violin. She told her friends that she wanted to be a teacher or a veterinarian. She loved the Hunger Games book series, and she liked playing fantasy video games. She also had a dog that she loved to train and took landscape photos that ended up on the local news. So a wide variety of interests here, John. Reading, video games, music, dog training, photography.
That's awesome. I love that so much. She was a quiet kid, but she was popular because she would just kind of listen and chime in when needed. Her friend Shelby would say that, quote, she would sit in the corner and listen to everyone else's gossip, and she'd kind of put in her two cents here and there, end quote. Shelby also remembers that Michaela enjoyed talking about boys, which is probably what most kids their age enjoy spending their time doing, is talking about boys, whether that be how dumb they are or how cute they are, all things boys all the time. She had actually dated a boy and stayed friends with him after they broke up, which is awesome. I love that you can, you know, your kids can have amicable relationships and still be friends after a breakup. Michaela was known to connect with people online. Shelby knew of at least four that she had connected with, but said those conversations usually didn't last long. The girls used to talk about moving to a bigger city where there would be more things for young people to do and places to shop that would be better than, quote, the old lady clothes stores that they had in the mall. Shelby said that all of this was just talk. None of them were known to disappear, and none of them were risky kids.
Yeah, it sounds like it's just kids sitting around dreaming of better times, right? And I think we all did that once upon a time, of trying to figure out, you know, where we want to go, what we want to be. There are some things that we'll talk about kind of in an empty way of, yeah, I'd love to go to Europe, but I'm never going to go. On April 11th, 2016, Michaela got in a car with Shelby and another friend to have lunch at a fast food place. Michaela talked about wanting a vacation, maybe going to Moose Jaw or Prince Albert. She also mentioned an upcoming family vacation to Regina or Saskatoon. Shelby told her friends that she had $5,000 in her bank account, but later on this would prove to be not true. Not sure if this was her trying to brag or just her not understanding how much money she had. Shelby said all the vacation talk felt like Michaela was just daydreaming. Again, just sharing stories of things that you feel like would make you happy. They had no idea that the next day would be the last time they would ever see Michaela. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police have used surveillance footage, phone records, and interviews with friends and family to trace the last known steps of Michaela Bawley. At 6:41 a.m., on April 12, 2016, Michaela texted a friend asking for a ride to TD Bank. The friends responded that the bank wasn't even open yet. Michaela's mom said that that morning felt totally normal. Michaela was not acting out of character. She was not saying anything odd. She was not overly secluded or gloomy. The two of them got ready, and her grandma drove her to school, which was a common occurrence.
Michaela logged on to the school Wi-Fi at 8:08 a.m. Surveillance footage shows that she put a binder in her locker at 8:21, but then she's also seen leaving through a back entrance at 8:30. So the same surveillance footage then saw her walking southeast along the railroad tracks. Between 8:40 and 8:50, she visited Terry's Pawn and Bargain, which is like a pawn shop, and tried to pawn a ring. The ring wasn't very valuable, so the pawn shop didn't even make an offer. Between 8:50 and 8:55 a.m., cameras caught her at the bank withdrawing $55 from her account. During these errands, if you want to call them that, Michaela sent text messages to Shelby, another friend, and her ex-boyfriend. The friend said that Michaela talked about needing help but didn't respond when she asked why. The ex-boyfriend said that some of the messages that were being sent were about her being unhappy and thinking about going to Regina for a couple of days. That's a city nearby.
Right. And of course, these are, I don't know, teenagers. John has one that lives in his house, about to have two. I have two in my house. And it's up and down quite a bit. You know, these some days are the best day ever. And if it's not, then it's one of the worst days ever. And there's not a lot happening in between all the time. So it's pretty normal, I think, to be receiving some unhappy texts, thinking about going to a vacation, not out of the norm for this group or for Michaela. After she left the bank, Michaela is on surveillance footage walking east on Broadway Street at 9 a.m. At about 9:10, she's seen entering a Tim Hortons, which we referenced earlier, very popular coffee shop in Canada. She bought a drink, and she was sitting down at a table by herself. At one point, it seems like she was just kind of fidgety. She sat there, and she took her phone apart and put it back together. Obviously, iPhones don't work that way, so it may have been some type of Android phone or some type of Google phone or whatever. She left the restaurant after about 15 minutes, but came right back in and immediately left through a different exit. That seems weird, John. Why could you think, I don't know, you walk out one door of a restaurant, come back in to leave another way? I would do that if I forgot which side of the restaurant I parked on, but she's just walking.
Yeah, I really don't understand that. I can't think of a good reason. She seems like a smart kid, so maybe she had a reason, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it reeks of avoidance. Like, she's trying to avoid something, but what is that something? Over the next 25 minutes, she's seen walking in a large circle around Tim Hortons. At 9:49 a.m., she goes back inside and sits down at a table again. So we see her doing this. It seems like she may be waiting for somebody to leave. But she has kind of anchored herself to this Tim Hortons. For about 20 minutes, she sat there and texts with friends and makes a couple phone calls that last longer than a normal teenage conversation. Unfortunately, it seems like she wasn't using the phone to call people. She used different apps to call people. So it wasn't the functional, I'm calling you from a phone line. That makes it harder to track who they are calling. At 10:12 a.m., Shelby got a text from Michaela saying, "I need help." Just a few minutes later, before Shelby could respond, she sent another one that said, "Never mind, I figured it out." She left and re-entered Tim Hortons yet again at 10:43 a.m. and then talked to an older lady inside. Authorities were able to locate this lady, and she said that Michaela was asking her to help her figure out how to get a hotel room. So this could have been nearby. This could have been in Regina, where she was talking about going. The woman said she wouldn't help her. Michaela got back on the phone and then left the restaurant for the last time. So she is at Tim Hortons for over an hour and a half, only ordering one drink, has all kinds of suspicious behavior. So where did she go after that? And did her stay at Tim Hortons have any influence on what ended up happening to Michaela next?
Jamie, you mentioned at some point while she was sitting there at Tim Hortons, she is seen on surveillance. Looks like she's taking her phone apart. I mean, is there any other reason to do that other than probably replacing a SIM card so that her phone calls can't be traced by the number that everyone else knows that she has?
Yeah, I would think that's possible. I mean, also kind of taking out, maybe changing a battery depending on what kind of phone she had.
Or just taking out the battery so that can't be traced anymore, maybe.
Yeah, so no like normal reason, unless she's just a fidgety person. She can do it really quickly, and that's something she does with her hands. I don't know, but that would kind of be an odd quirk, so it's hard to kind of grab that out of thin air.
Cameras show that she is seen walking west on Broadway Street East at 10:45 a.m. She makes a couple of turns and then disappears from surveillance footage for a couple of hours. An employee at the bus station remembers that Michaela was coming by and asking when the next bus to Regina would leave. So that's, you know, police, because of modern technology, really able to track her every move and then find these people that are giving valuable information. The employee told her the next bus wasn't until 5 p.m., so Michaela left without buying a ticket. At 11:35 a.m., she sent another text to a friend saying, "I'll see you at lunch." So did she legitimately plan on, like, all right, this is enough, I'm going back to school? Or was that just kind of a ruse? At 11:59, she re-entered the school and met with two friends at the cafeteria. So to answer my own question, she legitimately went back to school for a little bit. The friend said Michaela talked about plans to take a bus to Regina for vacation. Cameras then show her leaving the school again at 12:03 p.m.
I realize that it's been 9 years, but how can you just walk in and out of a school as a student and not be stopped?
I could have in elementary and middle school, but not in high school. And that was before 9/11. So,
right.
I don't know how she's able to do this.
Yeah, this is kind of odd to me that nobody's checking in on her. And this was a public school. It wasn't like it was a private place. I don't know. That is odd to me. And I hope maybe some of those policies changed after this. Not blaming the school for what happened, but maybe they would have been able to ask some questions to figure out what's going on. The next camera that shows Michaela is at the Trail Stop restaurant right next to the bus station. So at this point, I feel like we put together, she wants to go to Regina and stay in a hotel. She asked for somebody to help with that. And she's going to ride a bus. Since it didn't leave till 5, she went and had lunch with her friends. However, when she got to this restaurant, she ordered lunch again, ate, and she left the restaurant sometime between 1 p.m. and 1:45. That's quite a window. But, you know, the last time they could have seen her was 1:45, and that's the last time that Michaela is seen on any footage. Nobody remembers seeing her after that. There's no record of her buying a bus ticket or getting on any buses. The next morning at 6:51 a.m., her phone was shut off. Since then, she hasn't used any of her social media accounts or accessed them, except for one little piece of hopeful evidence. 3 months after this, one of Michaela's friends sent Michaela a Snapchat, and it was marked as open.
So 3 months after she disappeared, she received something. Well, her phone received something, and it is opened. Okay.
Right. And, right. You know, in my mind, I try to find other explanations for this. Did authorities log into her Snapchat to see if there was any activity and they viewed the message? I don't think so, because they would just show that they viewed others, and surely they would understand that, oh, that was us. There's no evidence, though, that it was actually viewed. There was no reply. There was no emoji added to it. Police also confirmed that her bank account had been completely untouched since she had withdrawn that $55 the morning that she disappeared.
So when Michaela's grandmother went to the school to pick her up that afternoon on April 12th, she was told that Michaela had not been at school all day. So that's false in a sense. I mean, she had definitely been in the cafeteria, but it sounds like she didn't go to any of her classes. So that's how you're marked absent or present in America. I would assume that according to her teachers, yeah, she wasn't at school, even though we do know that she was in the cafeteria at some point. She reached out to her mother, Paula, and the two women searched for Michaela themselves, and they spent hours searching anywhere they could think of before they finally had to call the police and report her missing. The local Yorktown police spent 3 weeks on her missing persons case before calling in the General Investigation Services, which is a unit that investigates major offenses. On July 21, 3 months after Michaela went missing, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police issued a child search alert for 3 provinces. After a year, the investigation was handed off to the Royal Mounted Police, and it was then listed as a historical case unit. So sounds like after a year, it was passed off to what would be like a cold case unit.
Right.
So the police also did a 3-day ground grid search in the wooded area near Michaela's school, but there was not any evidence found. Nothing new was found. On December 4th, 2017, which was a year and a half later, the child search alert was renewed and revised to cover all of Canada.
Yeah, I know Canada's a big place, and she was a teenager, so getting around, especially without accessing her bank account, might be tough. But I don't know why it takes a year and a half to put that out. Not sure what kind of processes are in place or maybe should be in place to help with that. There's never been a confirmed suspect in Michaela's case, but there is a person of interest. So there's no idea that, yes, we know this person was with her when she disappeared. We know that she was in this place or this person had a motive. But, of course, there are people in her life that they think may know something. This person was seen leaving the Trail Stop restaurant with Michaela the afternoon she disappeared. And again, that's where she stopped for essentially second lunch. This guy had a stocky build, muscular arms, dark hair, and a large tattoo of a fiery cross on his forearm. The man reported himself to police, who questioned him. Authorities also located and identified some of Michaela's online friends and contacted hotels around where those online friends lived. So, John, this is something that we saw a lot around this time and continue to see with people getting catfished or people meeting people online and then going out to meet them IRL, right?
I feel like that's probably what's happened here.
And that's what they suspected. So they looked, where do these people live and are there any hotels around? Has anybody like Michaela checked in? But they couldn't get any leads from this.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but like here in America, you wouldn't think at her age she would be allowed to be the one booking a motel room. So they shouldn't have her name on anything. So I wonder, you know, were these people using fake online names? Did they have somehow a way to cover up who they were when they booked these rooms, if they booked a room? But, you know, it seemed like Michaela was at the very least wanting some kind of money to help with the motel. Man, I don't know. This one's confusing.
It really is. In 2019, police put out more of the surveillance footage of Michaela, hoping that people in those areas would come forward with new leads. Over the years, the police and Michaela's mother have received hundreds of tips. One person reported seeing Michaela in Vancouver, so her mom immediately went there and started putting up posters. In 2019, there was another tip that came in from a man who claimed to have seen Michaela in Edmonton. And again, I'm not going to take time to paint the geography of Canada, but let's just say it's really big. And if she's traveled to other provinces across the country, then it's going to be really hard to find her.
Police have always treated this case as a missing persons case because they have never found evidence of any foul play. Her friends also believe that she left on her own. Some of her social posts also indicated that she was unhappy and wanted to leave. Her mother says that those were old posts and they were no longer relevant when she did disappear. Michaela's mom did initially believe that her daughter may have ran away, but when she saw what she left behind, such as her medications, the emergency money that she knew was kept in the home, it really changed Michaela's mom's mind that something else has happened to Michaela. So what happened to Michaela? I mean, it's really still a mystery today. What does your gut say, man?
Well, I mean, obviously the first thought is that she wanted to disappear, and that's what she did. And it's hard to dispute that. She obviously was telling people she wanted to be somewhere else. So to say that she didn't want to get away would just be lying to yourself. But you would also think that even after she went away, how would she have the resources to completely disappear? That's the tough part for me. Maybe she did run away and ended up falling into some trouble and something horrible happened and she hasn't been discovered. But if she's out there living her own life, I just have a really hard time believing she hasn't contacted anybody from her previous life and we've not been able to track her to any activity whatsoever. If she didn't run away, one theory that's been floated is that she was potentially kidnapped and trafficked. In 2019, a government report detailed the problem of human trafficking in Saskatoon. That area had a large male transient workforce for oil and gas, which was a major reason for such high instances of trafficking in the area. You have a ton of people who are kind of in and out of there. So if somebody disappears, it's really hard to track somebody that may have just been in the area for a few hours. This report also named Winnipeg, Edmonton, Calgary, and Regina as important hubs for human trafficking. And basically here we're looking at major cities, right? I think you would do the same thing in America of these are our biggest, most populated cities, especially those on the coast. Let's take a look at that. Michaela's home of Yorktown is right in the middle of all those cities. So equidistance, if you will, to a lot of the hubs of trafficking. Yorktown, obviously much smaller and maybe not as much of a presence. But if she did make it to Regina, if she did end up going to Edmonton, perhaps this is possible. The theory is that she may have been trafficked, and that's one that her mom is starting to, unfortunately, believe. She thinks if Michaela had run away, then she would have contacted somebody by now. And this, John, I don't know, since the movie Taken came out, I think this is one of everybody's greatest fears. I don't know. Trafficking, obviously, is a gigantic problem. And it's a huge problem here in America. But for those of us that don't see it or hear about it in our areas, it's almost like this thing that only happens in Hollywood, only happens in certain cities. But it happens everywhere, I know.
It happens a lot. And the numbers are really unbelievable. But like you said, I don't think that the media or news outlets do a really good job of kind of focusing in on these crimes. But it is real and it happens and people need to be aware. There's another theory, and I think that some of these theories, there could be multiple true at the same time, so hear me out. So this theory is that she fell victim to an online predator. I mean, Jamie, isn't it possible that maybe she did fall victim to an online predator and then ended up being human trafficked? I think two can be true at the same.
Right. I think that, again, I don't have insight into it. I know it's a problem and it's awful, but I would think that's a common way for people to be captured into trafficking.
Michaela had a large presence online. She was involved in several different social media apps. She chatted with lots of people and often used different aliases for those conversations. On March 1, 2016, about a month before she disappeared, Michaela wrote on her Snapchat and one of her Instagram accounts, quote, "Looking for Snapchat friends because I have none in real life. Add me." That is a desperate plea, and sometimes, you know, those pleas can be taken advantage of by bad people. So this led to suspicions that someone who contacted her was involved in her disappearance. Authorities have tried to gain more intel on her online history, but U.S. privacy laws have slowed down that process immensely. Michaela's mom gave investigators all of the passwords that she could, and one app in particular gave authorities reason to be suspicious. It seems that she was messaging on an app called Kik, K-I-K, which has been accused of providing inadequate parental control and too much anonymity to people with ill intent. Michaela's friends confirmed that they did not know how much she was talking to people on this app, but they do know that she was at least talking to somebody.
I can't recall the episode off the top of my head, but this app has come up before in a missing persons case. And I think ultimately that turned into a murder case. So certainly something to be concerned about or very aware of if you're investigating this. On October 12th of this year, they held a vigil for Michaela. It's been 9 years since she disappeared. Friends and family came to honor her and to kind of confirm their commitment to continue searching for her to find Michaela. Her mom, Paula, addressed the audience and told them how hard it's been. Every day she has to live with this and it's on her mind constantly, but she's determined to find out what happened and if she's alive to get Michaela back. And here's a quote from that day. She said, "Friends, family, and all who hold Michaela in your hearts, Tonight we stand here marking the ninth year since a vibrant voice, a radiant light, was inexplicably silenced in our lives. Her mom also described the silence in her daughter's case and how deafening it was. She said silence is a word that has taken on a devastating weight in our lives. Before, silence might have meant peace or a moment of quiet reflection. Now it echoes with the absence of Michaela's laughter, the hush where her footsteps should be, the void of her stories and dreams once filled our days. That's a very eloquent and powerful statement from her mother. And, you know, it feels like it's been a long time. But again, this is new and fresh and painful to those that love Michaela every day. And it's not as rare as it should be. But obviously, 20 years ago, we couldn't have tracked her as much as we did to know as much as we do. But it would be great if we could just take that next step, find any clue just to move forward and give us something to work on.
Michaela was 16 years old when she disappeared. She was last seen between 1 and 1:45 p.m. at the now closed bus station in Yorktown on April the 12th, 2016. She was wearing glasses, a teal infinity scarf, jeans, and a burgundy purple coat. She has naturally red hair, but she's known to change the color frequently. And at the time she went missing, her hair was blonde and wavy. She stood 5'2 and weighed 125 pounds. She had blue eyes and suffered at one time from acne. Michaela has a slight birthmark the size of a dime on her chin and a row of scars on her thigh from self-harm. Since Michaela did not have a passport, it is not believed that she was able to leave Canada. However, border crossing agents have been notified and the police continue to look for her. Authorities are not ruling out any possibilities. If you have any information that you could provide that would be helpful, police are ready and eager to take any and all tips to help bring Michaela home.
And we share this information legitimately hoping that somebody knows something, somebody has seen something, but also anytime there's a young person that goes missing, there's certainly going to be some change. She, at 16, was probably just about done growing. So as far as the height goes, I don't think that's going to be much different. But John, with the way she changes her hair and her looks and style, aside from looking for somebody 5'2 of that age, it may be hard to find her. So those birthmarks may kind of be the key to finding Michaela.
And this is a tough one. I mean, we have kids this age and it's, I don't know, it's unbearable to even imagine what life would be like if we had to go through this and just not knowing what was going on with your kids, if they're hurt, if they're needing help, or if they're just gone completely. So our prayers are with this family. And most importantly, I think our prayers are that justice is served.
Yeah. And ideally, this is a situation where she went away voluntarily. And
if that's the case, I wish that, you know, now that she's an adult, she could just let someone know, like, hey, I've moved on. I don't want you in my life anymore. I'm alive and I'm okay.
Right.
At least that could put to bed all those other thoughts.
Absolutely. And it would let people know where things are. So would love any and all information. If you happen to live in this area at the time, go back to your social media memories, to what you remember about what you were doing around this time. No detail is too small to share when it comes to trying to find somebody in this situation. So please help find Michaela.
Guys, we appreciate you tuning in each and every week. Don't forget, if you've listened to everything we have to offer, you can visit patreon.com, sign up for a membership for as little as $3 a month, and you have access to all kinds, years and years worth of bonus episodes that are only available to our Patreon members.
I also want to note, we got a question this week about somebody being unable to search those episodes. We have gone back and put in the words Patreon exclusive over on Patreon for all those. So if you subscribe on Patreon, that's all you have to look for to find the episodes. Sorry if they seemed hidden before. It was just a lack of naming conventions, but we've taken care of it.
Yep. And we always post those on the very first day of the month, whether that's a weekday, a weekend. That's the routine.
Holiday.
Yep. It's the first of the month. Just remember that.
Get up. All right, guys. We really appreciate you.
We love you. And until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.